Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
G'day everybody, welcome to the 20th edition of Tiger Tragics. Before we get stuck into it, it's been a big weekend of football for the Richmond Football Club. Let's have a listen to what happened on Friday night at the MCG.
Almost a full forward, Revolt from the side, but Henderson got a fist to it first. Back of the pack, Townsend! Oh, he kicks them week after week.
Revolt, can he gather it in the forward pocket? He's got it now. He tries the impossible across the face. Dusty's there. Dustin Martin takes it, centres it up. And the mark has been taken by Josh Caddy directly in front. He will go back and line up. Josh Caddy, this time it's good. He puts it through for the Tigers. There's their second goal.
Castagna goes the second time. Oh, you know, he's going to kick the goal. It's Butler.
Wow.
The Butler did it from the pocket. He's almost directly in front, Flossstone. Skips, kicks from 49 metres. Got a good piece of it. It's a goal. Oh, it's a great kick.
Oh, McIntosh to Dustin Martin. He's outside the 50. Martin wants to go. He centres it up. He goes to the kick for Edwards, who takes the mark in a great spot for the Tigers. He is directly in front. And there's another one for the Tigers. Couple of goals on the try.
And he's kicked to Martin versus Stewart. And Stewart does really well. And then Martin just blows him off away. He has a bounce. He has a second. He's going to run that wing on the southern side. Keeps it low. Aims the kick for Revolt. Sits for Jack. A thundering kick on his own in the goal square. Prestia. Tigers coast to coast. And have a listen to those Richmond riotous fans around the G.
What about Martin?
Revolt couldn't take it low down. Ball to be one. Dustin Martin's got it again. He got past one. He got past two. He's outside the 50. Oh. He goes with a big long kick. Top of the goal square. It'll be Greig. Take the mark. Kick the goal.
There was Martin again.
Dustin Martin, you are a superstar. Graham will get the handball away. And then Lambert will kick a goal. And that could be the knockout blow.
Look at the Tiger Army. Here they go. Listen to this.
Have a listen.
This is like a batsman who's just made 200 not out.
How's that?
At the MCG. A standing ovation for Dustin Martin.
Well, staring inside the 50, big jump from Zachary Walt. Little flick. Out. Cotchin. Goal!
Stark. Look at that.
Extraordinary Harlem Globetrotter stuff here at the MCG.
We're ready for the siren. And what a roar it's going to be around the MCG. It's going to be a roar like we haven't heard for a very long time, maybe never before.
Yes.
Finally, a different September feeling for the Tigers, a winning feeling. And how good's that? Tiger fans on their feet, they're taking selfies. I was here the day they broke through. They are into the preliminary final, and let's listen to them lap it up.
Good. Are we feeling about life at the moment? I'm Mitchell Scott. This is Tony Shebeki. How are you, Tone?
I'm excellent. Thank you, Mitchell. I'm feeling pretty good at the moment.
And Carl Bianco.
Gentlemen, great to be with you.
This is foreign territory for me. For most of us. Particularly for you, Carl. Carl, you're 21?
Yes.
So it's been 16 years since Richmond won a final. So you were 5 years old.
Yeah, that's okay.
Do you remember that?
Just.
I was 16, I'm now 32, so half a lifetime ago for me since I've had this feeling. And back then, even, it was just, we were still second rate back then against, when we beat Carlton in 2001, we were always going to get pantsed by Brisbane. So this is foreign territory to a lot of us, Shebeks.
Well, I was born when Richmond beat Geelong in the 67 grand final. I was too young, probably at 6 and 7, to really remember the early 70s and the grand final wins there. I was at the 1980 grand final where we beat Collingwood by a then record margin of 81 points. I was at the 82 grand final where we lost to Carlton. And I was at our last preliminary final
Up at Brisbane?
No, not up at Brisbane. At Punt Road with 10,000 other Richmond supporters watching it on the big screen. That night watching us lose by, I think it was about 10 goals or something.
We got flogged. It was a big...
Absolutely flogged. And it was a great night. The Tigers put on this huge night at Punt Road. Fans who can't go to the ground, come and watch it here. So we, and there was a massive crowd. And boy, we were pantsed.
We were pantsed. And they obviously went on to do it. If you've been living under a rock, if you haven't looked at the at a clock in the last 3 days and realised that it is Tiger time, Richmond won its first final in 16 years and a very important final at that, defeating Geelong 13-13-91 to a measly 5-10-40, it's fair to say. It's been a whirlwind last few days, I think, for everyone. We've sort of been soaking it up, been enjoying the moments, you know. And I think it's, you know, probably after today and after this podcast will be time to sort of take a bit of a breath and start focusing again on the preliminary final. But I think it's really good that everyone's kind of really soaked it up and enjoyed it. We haven't. You know
what? It's not just everyone who's a Richmond supporter. We've actually got a lot of respect from non-Richmond supporters. Those people that were knocking us and have been knocking us and saying, oh, you know, you're not going to win a final, all that. All of a sudden, we beat Geelong by a decent margin. And I had so many people coming up to me on the weekend who I assumed would normally be, you know, oh, wait until the preliminary final, you get done. People are saying, you guys could go on and actually win this grand final. It was amazing the amount of people, non-Richmond supporters, that have actually jumped on the Tiger train.
The train is roaring. We've got, you know, Kevin Bartlett has today declared that it is Tiger time officially. Pulling into Punt Road Station.
I was like, what was that?
It was the train.
The Tiger train. We're roaring. Let's go back to Friday night. The build-up to the game was intense. It was electric.
I felt sick. I was sick in my stomach.
I went to the
even a little bit of vomit, I think, might have come up my throat.
It was a hard day working Friday because it was just such a long day before we got it. I left here at SEN at 6 o'clock, went straight to the G, went straight to one of the bars there. A couple of schooners just to lessen the nerves, and then found my seat. And Carl happened to be sitting next to me, which was interesting for the fact that at the end we got to have a bit of a celebration there. But to sort of go through the game quarter by quarter, player by player, the first quarter really... The key word for the whole game really was pressure. The pressure that we applied throughout the game was electric. We kicked the first couple of goals. Geelong barely got a look in it. I think our pressure factor for the game, if I'm reading here correctly, we got up to 209, which is the highest amount of pressure recorded for the club since 2012. So when we talk about trying to get out of the blocks and you know, make a statement in September. Of, you know, we're not going to go down like we have in recent history, you know, that we did everything that we could have to have done that. Did we get enough pressure on the scoreboard at the time? Probably not. We didn't really take advantage of it all, but we put our best foot forward, and you know, I think that early on, at least, the feelings of doubt that maybe, you know, oh, you know, another September. Here we go again. You know, any doubt about straight sets was sort of starting to get eliminated by that, thinking we were in it.
Key factors in the game. You're right. Pressure was amazing. That tackle pressure from Richmond, 92 to 94 tackles. They actually had two more tackles than we did, but our tackles were like hard and fierce and tough. Patrick Dangerfield, with an effectiveness of 45%, would have to be his worst in his history, I reckon. I don't think he's probably had a worse effective game.
Even his wife said that they looked fumbly all night when it came
his
to
wife
the
did.
Yeah, his wife. He wrote a column yesterday and said, "Oh, geez, you looked a bit fumbly out there, didn't you?" And that's a direct result of Richmond's pressure. And I think that's something that we must praise the Richmond Football Club for. Is that everyone? A lot of the criticism about Geelong. I mean, God forbid Chris Scott actually pay credit to a football club that beat his team by 9 goals in a final. But if you listen to the press conference straight after, oh, we weren't. You know, we had too many players that just didn't play well. Well, you know why they didn't play well? Because we pressured them so much that they weren't able to get any of the game on their own terms.
Joel Selwood, 45 metres gained. That's
the
just...
whole, 6 kicks. Six
That's 45 metres gained.
I did giggle because a lot of the players, you know, coming into this game, the Geelong supporters were extremely confident going into this one. They were sitting around going, We beat you last time when we were down there. We didn't have Tom Hawkins. We didn't have Joel Selwood. We didn't have Mitch Duncan. And you know what? Harry Taylor did a number on Alex Rance. That'll happen again. We'll just wait till we get Tomahawk in there. Well, they were nowhere to be seen. The MCG was a fortress for us. And, you know, I know that the Geelong supporters will sit there and go, it wasn't our home ground. You know, it's not our home ground. Bad luck. You do play home games there. Maybe your supporters should have turned up more and come in and made
they
it.
They had
made
as much sense. Opportunity as Richmond supporters to buy tickets.
Exactly. And you know what? That sound when we ran out before the game and then we booed them when they came out as well. You know, I'm hearing talk today that some people are, you know, they didn't feel like they were comfortable being able to openly support their team for Geelong there. That's what it's. But it's all about. You know, you've got to create the noise to make it feel like your own home game. If that's the case, is it not?
Yeah, no, exactly. You'd be very quiet, Carl.
Yeah, I always seem to be quiet at the start. I'm not too sure. I just let you guys have a chat, and then I'll make a comment shortly.
Well, Carl, your first impressions of the first quarter. What were you feeling at quarter time? We led by a couple of goals. We had one denied from us by a Bashahuli goal because of a dodgy free kick that was paid against Jack Riewoldt for. Bit of a bump.
It wasn't dodgy.
You reckon it was right?
It was a fair shove.
Oh, yeah. Did you? Okay.
Fair shove.
We disagree then. What do you think, Carl? Quarter time?
Yeah, look, quarter time, I definitely thought we were the better team. We came to play in Geelong. They just sort of looked a little bit sleepy or something.
They were slow.
Yeah. I don't know what it was. We came out hard and fast, and it wasn't like we were up by a massive margin. You know, we moved forward to halftime and, you know, it was pretty close. I reckon it wasn't until late in that third quarter that we really started to run over the top of Geelong. And then in the fourth quarter, you know.
Well, the biggest thing for me, the biggest game changer for me was Guthrie not coming back on after his injury.
Yeah.
And that freed Martin up. I thought he did a great job. Even though he only played two quarters of footy, I'd nearly put him in their best players for the game. He did a great job on Dustin Martin for the first half.
He sure did. It was a strange second quarter because it felt like it was played between the arcs for the most part. We kicked one goal. I think they kicked those two goals late in the last couple of minutes of the quarter, which suddenly got it back to about 9 points. And at that point, you know, it was a long 20-minute break at halftime, sitting there going, oh, geez, you know, they got a little bit of momentum there. And that was kind of the feeling, I think, going into that third quarter, that Geelong haven't been able to get the game in any way on their terms, but they were only a couple of kicks down. They pressured the scoreboard in that first 10 minutes of the third quarter.
Yep.
Managed to get draw a level, and that was probably the lowest ebb for Richmond supporters of the game, where we all sort of felt like, oh, here we go. Maybe, you know, if they do click and we drop off a bit, then, you know, they can hit the scoreboard and put us away. And then, as you say, Cam Guthrie goes off, enter Dustin Martin, who takes his game to another level. And there were a couple of really key moments there for Dusty where there was a little burst and a beautiful little kick to set up Shane Edwards, who goaled from about 35 out. And then probably the play of the night that everyone's been talking about since Friday night, where it's a 50-50 contest with Tom Stewart, typical Dusty fashion, does the fend off, burns him, runs the fastest he did all night, bombs it 60 metres long. Jack Riewoldt reads the ball beautifully, happens to collect it on the bounce, and Dion Prestia, having read and anticipated the whole thing, streams forward. Jack puts it on his chest 10 metres out. Richmond go into the three-quarter time break 13 points up, and suddenly there's just a bit of a buzz around the MCG, and everyone's thinking, we can do this, we can do this. And then, party time.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? A lot of journalists and the like have put Dustin Martin as our best on ground. I don't think he was. I think Dion Prestia, for me, was best on ground. I thought his efforts for the entire game were absolutely amazing, and probably his best game that he's played for the Richmond Football Club. I have no doubt about that. And throw in Josh Caddy as well. I thought Josh Caddy was fantastic. So finally, Richmond fans are starting to see what these two guys can put together when they play well together.
Prestia, 31 disposals, 348 metres gained, five clearances.
18 contested possessions.
And 23 pressure acts. That's the one stat I keep coming back to, that I know that we had the SEN player ratings done here on the weekend, and there was a bit of criticism from a few people that came into the Twitter account at Tiger Tragic saying, oh, geez, you know, where was there was no credit paid to Jack Graham and Castagna and these guys because they just looked at the, you know, kicks, marks and scoreboard. When the one stat I think that we need to mark for all these sort of guys is the pressure acts and the tackles. And, you know, I look at your Dion Prestia, 23 pressure acts. I look at, you know...
The only person that beat him for pressure acts was Sean Grigg with 24.
Which was, yeah, which
Kane Lambert, I think, had 24 as
you
well.
You talk about guys and how they've changed their game. Sean Grigg was such an outside one-way runner 3-4 years ago, got the easy ball on the outside, didn't really lay any tackling pressure now. Now he's leading in a final for pressure acts. Jack Graham, third game, had 8 tackles till halftime, 6 in the first quarter. And, you know, there were commentators last week who wanted to drop him because of experience and thinking that, oh, if Josh Caddy's going to come in, we can't drop Townsend like for like. We decided that Markov was the expendable one, and that's what they ended up thinking of because we still had enough runners in there. We weren't going to deprive ourselves of that run, which, as we saw, we burned them, really, for the whole night.
You speak about people who have played 3 games. What about Josh Townsend?
Jacob Townsend.
I'm just going to call them all Josh today. They're all Josh. Everyone's Josh. 21 kicks in 3 games of footy for 13 goals.
2 disposals on the weekend, 2 goals. You're talking about taking the most of opportunities.
21 kicks for 13 goals. It's not bad.
It's not bad at all. And you're talking about, blokes have taken their opportunities on the big stage. I'm so proud of the fact that this team was going to be pillared all week that, is it going to stand up to finals pressure? Is it, they've wilted before. Geelong's got all the finals experience. You know what Geelong's finals experience was, though? They've lost a lot of finals in recent years. Mm. They've lost a lot of finals on the MCG. Yes, they've had the wood over Richmond. And looking back on it, when I sat there on Friday night before the game, and I thought, what's the argument against Richmond here? The argument was history. History and experience. That was the only argument against Richmond. And you know what? Meant nothing. Meant nothing.
You've been very quiet, Carl.
Yeah, can I just say, though, Kane Lambert, I reckon, has stepped up so much this year. I know we've recognised him for his efforts across the year, but to me that was demonstrated last weekend when we obviously smashed Geelong. We didn't just beat Geelong, we smashed him, by the way, and it's a great feeling to have. But I reckon, he kicked 1-3. It would have been nicer for him to have another goal or two. But, he's got 24 disposals on the weekend. I reckon he's really stepped up because if we had it gone back a few years ago, I would have been sort of arguing that Lambert probably, what's the purpose of having him in our best 22? But I certainly think he's proved, how great a player he can be, and he's had his best season.
You're right. He was his story. I heard his story again on the weekend, and it's a pretty magnificent one when you think about it. He was on the Northern Blues list in the VFL, and he dominated. He won the best. He won the best player in the league award by about 80 votes or something ridiculous. And the thought at the time was, why doesn't Carlton, rookie list him and get him on the senior list? They avoided him. They went, nah, you know what? He's probably surplus to requirements of the type of player we already have. So he goes to Williamstown in the VFL, tears it up again, and Richmond a year later decided, we'll throw your lifeline in the rookie list. Comes on. He got to a certain level, and you're right, we all sort of thought, has he got another gear to go? Is this also what we're going to offer? Is he going to be a bit like a Nick Graham at Carlton, where does some good things, never going to really make it up to a consistent AFL standard? But this year, he has been just as underrated as just about anyone in that team for presence, for bobbing up with a goal when it's important, and for actually getting those sort of in and under numbers that you don't notice on the day, but you go back and you watch the replay and you go, there's a passage play. Sure enough, who's in the middle of it? Kane Lambert.
Can I congratulate Chris Scott for handing Richmond that final on a platter?
Yes.
If Chris Scott, by any way or means, thought that Harry Taylor was going to beat Alex Rance twice in 4 weeks, fair dinkum, he's a lot worse a coach than I thought. I love Chris Scott. I think he's a really good coach. But that was the most stupidest decision to play Taylor up forward again, knowing that Rance was going to pick him up. There is absolutely no way Rance was going to get pantsed
again
twice in 4 weeks. He is one of the best defenders we have seen in this game's history. And he prides himself on winning the contest. There is no way he was going to let that happen again. As soon as I saw Harry Taylor go up forward, I thought, we are a massive chance.
Go back the night before, we were all looking at each other when they decided to drop Daniel Menzel, and we went, well, that's a win. that's a win. And I know that the argument, you know, against him was, oh, you know, his lack of pressure, which in the end, I don't know whether one, they all lacked pressure on the night. Correct. But they needed avenues for goal. And you had Hawkins tied up, who bobbed up with one goal. You had Taylor bobbed up with one goal. And aside from that, they had Patrick Dangerfield and Stephen Motlop kicked two in the last minute of the second quarter. And there was someone else who bobbed up with one other goal for them, and that was it. James Parsons in the early in the third quarter. That was it. They needed avenues for goal. They needed someone to find them, you know, an opportunity. Which they needed a Jacob Townsend, who two opportunities, two goals. They dropped that, and in doing so, went in with a very lumbering forward line that we knew that our defensive system was able to get a read and just pick it up and lap it up. The Rance was outstanding. I mean, look, there were that many outstanding players really on the night for us, but Rance and Asprey just working off those two. You look at our inside. This is the stat I reckon that proves how ineffective Geelong's forward line was all night and how effective ours was. Marks inside 50 and tackles inside 50. We had 18 marks inside 50 to 5. Mm. They could not get the ball in there and actually keep it in there and do something with it. And then tackles inside 50, 21 to 4. 21 to 4. As soon as the ball went inside our 50, we locked it up. We kept it up there. We kept the pressure on. They had four in there. No wonder the ball kept getting spat back out because Hawkins and Taylor and these guys were nowhere to be seen.
Yeah. Do you know what else, though? Dusty didn't kick a goal the whole night. He kicked one behind.
He set up a couple of beauties.
Yeah, no, he set up some great goals. But, you know, usually when we need a spark, Dusty pops up and kicks a goal, and that really gets our momentum going into, you know, it's around about close to three-quarter time. He'll kick a goal. We have the break, and we come out and smash it in the last quarter. Not in all cases, but even early in the fourth quarter when we really need a spark and a bit of a motivator, Dusty will come up and kick that goal. We weren't dependent on Dusty to kick that goal, and he still had a great game. He had 28 disposals. So I think that says something about where we are as a football club as well. We're not dependent on individuals like we have been in the past seasons. We're actually working together as a team, and they're playing for each other and for the club. They're not sort of, you know, playing as a bunch of individuals, if you know what I mean.
The amount of upside there still is, as you say. Dustin Martin didn't hit the scoreboard. Jack Riewoldt kicked the last goal of the game in junk time. But he was crucial in so many plays as well, where there was, in the first quarter, that deft little left foot kick across the goal that set up Dusty to then put it back onto Josh Caddy. He was involved in that passage of play in the last quarter where he laid a little bump and Dusty took, and then got the handball onto Dusty, who then put it on Dan Butler's chest, which then led to one of the great moments of jubilation we've seen, when Dusty came to the bench about 10 minutes to go in the game. And 85,000 Richmond supporters just were in raptures.
Funny you mentioned that moment, because it was exactly the same time that Dusty was coming to the bench that we put up the crowd figure on the scoreboard of 95,046 or whatever it was. And we heard this massive roar, and we said, the scoreboard control room is sort of, there's a level down the front, and then we're up, there's people up the back as well. And we go, they're not cheering like that for the scorer, for the crowd, are they? That is amazing. And then someone down the front said, no, Dusty's coming off.
Yeah.
It was right at that exact moment, and it was very weird, but no, they love him.
It's an amazing thing that, you know, we don't see that too often in Australian rules because we rotate so often, but it felt like a moment in a Premier League game where the champion player who's kicked three goals and scored a hat trick in an FA Cup final has been subbed off to the bench, and you know the whole crowd stops and recognises this person. Happened again actually about 5 minutes later when Rance came off as well. Not quite to that sort of level, but I think it was Carl and I looked at each other. And we said, we're up by 9 goals. What is going on? There was this sort of feeling of just jubilation and disbelief at the same time that this is where we're at. We are. We just couldn't. No one wanted to fathom that this is where we were because we didn't want to get ahead of ourselves.
And I think if we'd be honest too, three or four of those goals towards the end were junk time goals. I think Geelong had given up and they thought, well, that's it. We're not going to get there. So
we'd broken them.
Back. Yeah, we had exactly. So, but to say that, there's no doubt. I thought we were at least a 7-goal better team than they were on the day.
Easily, and I think
it probably could have been 10 goals. We could have been 5-6 goals up at least at half time had we have just been a little bit more straighter.
And I think we feared that, you know, the one of the themes when we've come back to this football club throughout the year has been
inaccuracy.
Yeah, accuracy in front of goal. Have we been able to hit the scoreboard enough? And in the last month or 6 weeks, we actually, our scoring has opened up dramatically. If you look at the numbers, I know early in the year, you know, 76 was the magic number, but now it seems to be, you know, we're peppering up around that 90 to 100 mark each time. I was so wrapped for Trent Cotchin. This is a bloke who's been criticised from pillar to post for not standing up in finals. He had a great game. And he, you know, he led from the front, and he had this, you know, he had that moment in the last quarter where, yeah, it was a junk time goal, but it just symbolised, you know, the whole night. He does a blind turn. There's a little fend off in there as well. Throws it on his left boot, floats through, and everyone ran to him. And, you know, I think we all wanted to jump the fence at that point and put our arms around him as well.
Yeah. Well, can I just say on that, like,
no.
That, all right, then I'm out of here.
No,
look, that as soon as that happened, for me, that was just a true reflection on the season Koch has had. Like, it was just a remarkable thing to see him do that. It, you know, you could say it's a fluke, pretty skillful in my opinion. And I reckon, you know, that just for me sealed how great a season Koch has had as a leader and a contributor. Well, like, he's always there. He's just always there. Every game, you always see him pop up. And it's almost like every game he plays, is he's trying to have his best game of his life. Like,
you're absolutely
been fantastic.
Spot on. The two main leaders of our club, in Damien Hardwick and Trent Cotchin, have had the most amazing 6 or 7 months this year.
Yeah.
I mean, for everyone wanted Hardwick's head last year. Everyone bagged Cotchin for what they perceived to be a poor effort as a captain. And those two blokes have probably done a little bit of soul searching over the summer. And they've come into 2017 with a whole new attitude and a new breath of life in their football as coach and captain.
Mm.
And it has rubbed off right throughout the whole team. I have no doubt about that, that their renewed vigour for this football club and want to prove everyone wrong in the way that they go about things has been a key point in them why this club's gone to where it's gone.
You're spot on. The key thing that's come out over the weekend when people look back at the year and go, geez, what changed at Richmond? It is the key thing they've done is that they invested in their people and their culture.
Yeah.
And
for Richmond to stay with Damien Hardwick at the end of last year, he's come out of 2016 and gone, well, this club actually believes that I can do this job. I now need to find a way to make sure that that happens. And I'm sure that's what his thoughts would have been throughout the summer. And he's come back in 2017, knowing that he had the ability to do it, but just needed to prove it to everyone that he could. And Trent Cotchin would have been the same. He would have listened to those naysayers last year. And that would have had a marked effect on Trent Cotchin, who's a very proud man. And I think Damien said it a couple of times. You know, people don't see the work that Trent Cotchin does off the field to justify his captaincy of this club and what he does. So the same with Cotchin. He would have gone off through the summer and thought, I need to really prove to these people that I am worthy of the position that I've got, knowing that the position of Richmond captain is a treasured and cherished position. Those two blokes have done an amazing job in their turnaround 2017.
And the key thing of that, as you say, it's the little things. They've opened themselves up. They've made themselves more vulnerable. They've opened the lines of communication. And there's just the little things. There was an incident on Friday night post-game in the rooms. Apparently it's something in the All Blacks culture. And you talk about how successful the All Blacks are as a national team. There's no job that's below anyone. And Trent Cotchin went around the rooms after the game, last person in the rooms, and cleaned the place up. He tidied up all the Gatorade bottles, put them in the bin. And, you know, I think it goes to that sort of saying that the standard you walk past is the standard you accept. And it's saying that you're fully invested in this place, that you want to see the standard of where it's going to be. And, you know, everyone's in, all in. This, you know, the little things like that, from the boot starter to the captain of the football club, we're all in this together. And for those sort of acts, that goes to show about the change in the place. And this might be a time just to mention that Fox Sports is reporting that Focus on Footy leader, remember our good friends at Focus on Footy Group last year who tried to challenge the board, Dr. Martin Hiscox is taking credit for where Richmond finds itself right now, saying that Richmond wouldn't be where it is without the influence of that group that challenged the board and put everyone on notice. What do we think of that?
Look, there obviously had to be change at the end of last year, and I personally reckon that the changes the Focus on Footy group were proposing were kind of already in the works behind the scenes. Yeah. Like, you look at it, Barmy was sort of in negotiations with a few clubs to work out his future. And I think the best thing that we've done is sort of, I bring back Barmy to Richmond because obviously he played in Richmond's grand finals and 70s and whatnot. And
do not underestimate that Neil Baum coming back to Richmond and its effect that it's had on the club. He's been very much a part of successful...
100%.
Yeah.
Well, just to quote Mr. Hiscock here, he says, we are not looking for a pat on the back, but without our group, Neil Baum wouldn't be at the club and I don't think we would be where we are today. I think it's general knowledge now that we got him to Richmond.
Get him a free ticket to the grand final.
Well, he's done this interview for Fox Footy from Paris. Apparently, he's over there for an art show. So he wasn't even...
Oh, fancy.
So he wasn't even here for the final. But... I suppose the question off that is, so we're all pretty much in agreement that these changes were going to be happening regardless of whether this group was putting the pressure on or not. Do you think we would have had the level of intent of looking in and reviewing the club if not for that group putting the pressure on?
Oh, I'm sure we would have, yeah. Because last year, 2016, was an unacceptable season. There's no doubt about that. And Brendan Gale's no fool. And he would have ordered that review happen and made sure that the mistakes of last year didn't happen again in 2017. So, yeah, look, good on him. Thanks for coming. Appreciate your efforts. But,
So with that, I suppose we must credit Baum, Gale and O'Neill, our three elder statesmen of this football club now that are overlooking everything. And, you know, I just want to go up and shake their hand and say thank you for everything. It's funny, I did share a text with KB on Friday night saying, how good's this? You know, it's Tiger time. What are you thinking? He sent back a text saying, I thought we were going to win by 12 goals. You know, I'm losing my touch. So it just goes to show that sort of level of just excitement that we've got in the place. A couple of quick things before we sort of look ahead a bit. There was a play in the second quarter, I think it was, that sort of summarised the night as a whole for me, and that was Brandon Ellis and Patrick Dangerfield were going head-to-head at a contest. Now, Brandon Ellis is a player who we've all criticised in the past for being a bit, you know, outside player, doesn't put his head over the ball.
That's been different this year, though.
Yeah.
He's definitely changed his game as well.
And Danger's been a player who's renowned for his hardness and toughness at the ball. And they both went at it, and Ellis actually went, all right, I'm in, and went even harder. They both collided. They both bounced off each other. Both players get up, bit ginger. Six Richmond players run to Brandon Ellis, rub his head. Well done, you know. Thanks. That's what we're all about here. No one went to Patrick Dangerfield. Mm. In the lining up of the and national anthem, Richmond players arm in arm, tight, united together. Geelong players, they all spread out. No arm linkage whatsoever. They wanted to try and do what Adelaide did the night before and do the big stare down. We'll make ourselves look bigger. No, it actually just made you look like 22 individuals out there, not a football club.
Made them look like a club that were actually from Geelong, to be honest.
Are you counting Geelong as a city?
Oh, hang on. Controversial. Ooh,
no.
I like Geelong.
I'm just saying, a nice place. They just seemed like a club that came from a regional part of Australia.
Okay.
Did anyone notice anyone that may not have been up to finals footy out there? And probably the one person that I did, and it's a guy that I've loved dearly and spoken highly about him all year, is Castagna.
That's what I thought you were going to say. He kicked a goal. My only concern of taking him out is you need to have someone who's going to come in with that pressure.
Well, let's have a look at the reserves. And
they had another great game on the weekend. And
Stengel.
Well, yeah, exactly. Four. Oh, Dave Lloyd kicked three, didn't he? Yeah.
I think Castagna has to be taken out. I'm sorry. I got in a tweet war last night about this as well. I just come across a discussion of, you know, potential changes for the prelim. And I certainly think Castagna has to.
I love the kid.
Yeah.
And he will get plenty of opportunities in the future. But at the end of the day, it's a preliminary final. And you've got to go in with a 100% absolutely spot on team. And I just think, based on his performance from Friday night, I'm just not sure if he's in that best 22 finals players that we need. But that doesn't mean that he won't be in the future, and it doesn't mean that another year under his belt, next year he's going to be even better.
Yep.
But, I think players, if they're realistic with themselves, would know exactly where they fit in the whole structure of things.
And he might be the expendable one. I know last week we were talking about could Broad be the one who comes out. I was really pleased with... He had a couple of clangers there in the second quarter, a couple of turnovers that we all thought, he's going to drop his head here. But to his credit, he kept going, kept positive, and I reckon that's part of the leadership of the guys like Rance and Grimes around that defensive setup that you know can take these guys and go, no, let's keep going with it. The bloke we haven't spoken about yet who deserves far more praise than he's been getting is Nick Vlosten. I thought he was a star. He was 10 marks, bobbed up with a really important goal. He lays tackles. He takes contested marks. Mark Robinson says in his tackle today that he goes, I don't think I've seen anyone run back with the fly to the ball more than Nick Vlosten, and that just typifies the courage that he shows. He's the guy who I reckon, when I look at that Richmond side and go, who's going to stand up in September and you know improve their legacy and go, you know what, he's a finals player, which we've never seen from a Richmond side yet, where anyone's gone, you know what, he's a finals player. For me, Nick Vlosten and Dion Prestia, they're the two who on the weekend went, you know what, they're finals players. And Dusty obviously is having a day out from it. Do you think, I know there was talk earlier in the year that Vlosten should be spending a bit more time in the midfield, but do you think if we did that, we'd be robbing Peter to pay Paul?
I'm liking what he's doing at the moment. I'm happy with where he's at. Well, he's predominantly playing a sort of a back pocket type role, isn't he?
Yeah, he's almost like a Corey Enright.
Yeah, a bit of a sweeper to an extent. Yeah, just that last man in defence, which allows Grimes and allows Rance to move up the ground on their players, and you know that Vlosten's always going to stay home.
Yeah,
Reece Conker tried to do that in the last couple of years
when he's been fit.
Yeah, when he was fit, that was sort of his role, but now Vlosten's taken that over and is doing it really well.
Yeah, I did hear a little rumour that Conker could potentially be on the cards to come into the prelim final. But if history repeats itself, I honestly love Conker.
I don't know, but I don't know where you'd put him.
It's exactly right. Well, I think Vlosten plays that role.
Because there's no one in that back line that you could seriously consider taking out at the moment.
And you can't play him forward.
Yeah, we just can't bring him in again. Like, if history... As I said,
no, but
I'd
understand if there was an injury or something and there was a spot available, but at the moment there just isn't.
Look, if Hooley or Vlosten were injured, then Conker would most likely be the best suit to replace either one of them. But as it stands, either one of them aren't injured at the moment. So
Reece Conker will be a premiership player, but it will be with the VFL.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, so we've got the bye week this week. And the Richmond VFL side obviously had a win on the weekend.
So they got Box Hill at Port Melbourne on Saturday afternoon.
And look, given the standard that we've sort of been setting in the AFL and the VFL this year, who knows? I mean,
a big chance
against there.
Well, the advantage we have is that Hawthorn haven't played in the finals, so that means that most of those senior blokes aren't available for Box Hill, and so they've just been running with their list. Whereas Richmond have had all of our blokes training together, and the benefit that you get from that as a VFL team, I think, is massive. So you would have to say that the Tigers have to be favourites.
And you think every player in that VFL side would be hungry, knowing that Correct. If I play extremely, extremely well, I'm a chance of playing in an AFL preliminary final.
Someone does a calf at training or something, you've got to be ready to put your hand up.
Exactly. How lucky have we been with injuries? When you think about it...
But that is a normal year for an AFL team. The team that has the least injuries or has the most players available for selection come finals time is normally the team that goes on to win. Mm. You don't see too many battered and bruised teams, apart from maybe the Bulldogs last year, but having that week off gave them more of a full list to pick from for that first week of finals. You don't see too many battered and bruised teams go on to win flags.
The war of attrition. I mean, everyone talks about it. And that's why they talk about, you know, with the bye week that, you know, it actually takes that away from everyone, because it just puts everyone back on that level pegging. Are we worried about having another week off? Are we going to have one game in 26 days or something like that?
I still think it's an issue. I do. I think it's a real issue to have only that one game or that two games in 4 weeks. But having said that, I read in the paper today that the Tigers are going to do a fairly full-on match simulation type scenario for Saturday. In a way, that's great, but they're only going to be able to do it with 22 blokes, because the other 22 blokes are going to be playing in the VFL.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be able to give them a full match simulation type situation. And you'd wonder whether they were able to get onto a team that might have just dropped out of the VFL or someone, or just say, hey, can we just grab you for a bit?
Have
a bit of a game, practice match.
The upside, I guess, is that you look at, we had the week off and we came out with that level of pressure. We were locked in a cage for 2 weeks and we're ready to roar. We recorded our best pressure that we've done in 5 years. If they can reestablish that after another fortnight, build it all up, and you know, be released from the like a cannonball out
and
of
that's
the...
going to be the major advantage, is that there's going to be some sore bodies from all that tackling on Friday night, so to have that week off is probably going to be a massive advantage from that regard. But momentum is such a big thing in sport, as we all know, and just to have that that break in momentum, I think, is dangerous. You can't avoid the fact that it is dangerous.
It was such an important game to win, not just because the monkey's off the back and the relief and all that we sort of feel, but in the side of the draw that we've got, the loss, it was a preliminary final almost in some senses, and an elimination final in the same sense, because the loser, Geelong, they have to play Sydney this week at the MCG.
Tough gig.
The Sydney are the only team in the comp, I reckon you can say, it's that you've got no advantage by playing at the MCG against. And then if they just so happen to win that, well, over the road they go to Adelaide over the border, then play Adelaide in front of 50,000 screaming Adelaide Crows fans. So that's a tough ask. Meanwhile, we now come up against, in a fortnight, against either GWS or West Coast. A GWS side that's looking like it's losing players by the minute and just looks slow and a mile off it. And against a West Coast team that's, you know, well done to them, but they've had to play extra games. They have to travel a lot. They're old. They're weary. This is our best. We have got the best chance of any team to make a grand final. Who would you rather be playing?
West Coast.
Oh, I've started a Twitter competition trying to get everyone behind getting Stevie Johnson back in the GWS team.
Get them
he deserves to be in that team.
So you roll your eyes, your picks.
Please, Leon Cameron, you need Steve Johnson in that team. You cannot win without him.
Gold Coast, how am I going? GWS, I don't think they're going to win in the final.
No, I think West Coast.
The West Coast have got an all right record up there as well. They played them up there a couple of weeks ago. They only went down by a goal or two.
I think they're going to win West Coast.
They've got finals experience. They've got a bloke named Sam Mitchell in the middle there who's, you know, won a few. And
we speak about momentum. They go into this game just full of confidence and the fact, you know, that they know that they can get out of that sort of scenario.
Yep.
Whereas GWS still have their tail between their legs. And they're going...
And injuries, a few injury concerns. Yeah. Jeremy Cameron's out with a hamstring. Shane Mumford is on crutches at the moment, might not get up again. You know, and they just look slow. And, you know, blokes like Brett Deledio who, you know, part of me thinks I'd love to see Lids come back and we flog them at the MCG. You'd feel a bit sad for him.
I got a lot of respect for Brett Deledio.
I do, but at the same time, there's part of me that goes, you left us because you wanted to win a premiership and here we are.
I'm kind of glad he left, to be honest.
Well, I keep coming back to how good are we to have, you know, how have we done out of that trade?
Exactly. Yeah, way better. Yeah. We've been a way better side.
Look, Brett, it'd be nice to see him have some sort of success, but at the same time, I think, you know, I'm bleeding yellow on black here first and foremost. Club first. So, you know, we've got a week now to see what happens there, and then, you know, we'll regroup and go from there. But did anyone go out after the game to sort of just soak in the atmosphere around Richmond Way?
I was in the car driving to Phillip Island, had a weekend of motor racing.
Actually, straight in.
Down there, and I was tuned in to Finney's final siren.
How are the callers going?
Over the moon. Yeah. Over the moon.
Yeah, no, I just did the walk back from the MCG to Richmond Station, so I sort of just embraced everybody, all the Tigers fans outside the
There's
G.
So many,
and
of
you
them.
Know
there
what?
Was.
You should have seriously. You should have done yourself a favour and just walked an extra 10 minutes, and just gone up Swan Street to Church Street and back, because that would have been crazy.
Full of Richmond fans.
Yeah. I did a bit of a lap around and then ended up at the Cricketers Arms on Punt Road there, and it was going off.
The topless barmates.
No, that's the Royal.
Oh, okay.
The Royal. Certainly half the Richmond supporters went topless by the end of it. We were over the moon. Every 10 minutes they'd play the song and we'd all sing. And I got a quarter to one. I jumped on the train and it was chock-a-block still with Richmond supporters. And I reckon we sang the song 5 times on the way home. It was just incredible. It was foreign territory for us all, but we absolutely embraced it. We loved it. You know, I know there's talk that we're getting ahead of ourselves now. I don't think that's the case. I think we're just enjoying it because we don't know what this is like. This is fantastic.
Yeah, well, I had a guy singing the song on the train on the way home, and they're like, the other Tiger supporters were like, we haven't won the prelim lit yet. Just keep a lid on it. Keep a lid on it still.
Keep a lid on it. Enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah. Another thing which
that's what the club's done.
Yeah, another thing that was pretty incredible, right? Didn't even know this bloke. He was... Probably he had a couple of drinks, to be honest. But
didn't kiss you, did he?
No, didn't kiss me. But he just gets off the train. He's high fives and he says, "Oh, go Tigers!" Like
now, yes, I had lots of high fives.
Just how great is it though? Like all the Richmond supporters being happy and thrilled that we're in a prelim and we're having some success that's really long overdue. And look, in 3 weeks' time, was it 3 weeks away the grand final?
Three weeks' time,
we could be playing a grand final.
My 12-year-old boy, who sat in front of you guys, had never been to a game where there was a crowd of 95,000 people.
Hadn't he?
Never been to an AFL game.
It was so loud. It was amazing.
Exactly. Yeah, the noise was just... at the end of the game where, you know, read the scores and all that sort of stuff after the first singing of the song and then got to say that line and the Tigers are now through to a preliminary final. I've never said that before.
That's very
ever,
special, isn't it?
On the ground and on a ground announcement at the MCG. So that was really good. And the response from the crowd and everyone, it's exciting stuff.
Just soak it
and
up.
And we just pray to God that the four teams playing this weekend belt the living daylights out of each other.
Well, I'm just so happy that Adelaide and Sydney meet on that other side because, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead, but those two teams are the dangerous.
You don't want Sydney in a preliminary final.
No. And you don't want them in a semi-final like Geelong got this week. It was interesting just before we wrap up. I wore, I've never been the sort of person to go out and wear footy club paraphernalia. I've just sort of never been me. I do happen to have a couple of Richmond jumpers and that sort of thing now because I got given a few by someone who used to work at BLK after they went bust and they were a sponsor last year. Saturday morning, I thought, oh, you know what?
You can't even buy a jumper from the club.
I take the freebie. I put the jumper on.
100% of your money when you buy from the club goes straight to the club.
Oh, well, you know what? I'm thinking I might have to buy a new scarf this week.
That's 30 bucks.
30
thanks,
bucks. Oh, thanks. Well, we're all about to buy finals tickets.
For Dustin Martin's 1.4.
It was I walked into Subway wearing the jumper. Oh, you know, geez, you must be up and about. And then got petrol. And then, you know, everywhere you went, everyone was wanting to, you know, geez, you know, how good's this? And I'm like, I just wanted to tell people how happy I was. It was just don't know how to feel.
Once again, everyone is just riding on the coattails of the Richmond Football Club, aren't they? We spoke about this last week. Mm. The newspapers, the TV station, everyone. It's just all Richmond.
We're going to be the story of the finals, I think. Like we're one way or the other, which is, you know, you'd hate to look. We'll talk about the preliminary final next week. But just as we wrap up, I just needed to point out to everyone, if you are a member, you should have got something in the mail and possibly by email as well
about
telling
the
you. Yeah, the ballot for, and it gives me great pleasure to say this, you know, the possibility of grand final tickets, which, again, foreign territory for all of us.
Now, the important things about it is you need to have a look at what category you are.
Yes.
So category one are going to be the people who get the first lot of the tickets. If there's any tickets left after Category 1, people have got their tickets. Then Category 2 get the opportunity, and then Category 3 after that.
You
be
must
be careful.
Yep.
Be careful. If you put 8 membership numbers on the one form, they will not split membership. So if there's not 8 tickets available, if there's only like 6 tickets and they can't give you 8, you won't get any.
Yeah.
So be wary of that. Secondly, also be wary of the fact that you are bidding for the best available ticket. Now, if you're not willing to spend $710 on a Category 1 ticket, then don't do it because they'll be taking $710 out of your credit card.
Yeah.
Just be wary of that as well.
So what you have to do is you have to get on to, you either go to, I think it's this Thursday, the 14th of September, is the registration day for online. So you go to tickettech.com.au, have your barcode details there, and there'll be a tab there that says, you know, to pre-register for your grand final tickets. And you fill all that out and you go into the ballot. And if you're Category 1, you're guaranteed a seat, which is like that's like the Morris Rioli Club and the Platinums and all those sort of stuff. And then there's Category 2 after that, yep, which is your gold, silver, bronze.
And then Category 3 is your three-game members and your animal memberships.
Yeah, all those sort of types. So you aren't... Yeah,
which are very important to the club.
Well, that's what keeps the ticket rolling. But you need to go on there and do it. You can also do it by phoning Ticket Tech, and I think you can also do it by postage, but you need to get onto it pretty immediately. And as you say, if you are putting 8 tickets together, your chances are better of getting tickets if you're going in groups of, you know, 2, 3, or 4.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's not to say that we're not saying we're going to be playing in a grand final just yet. We're not looking that far ahead, but we're just saying that this is what you have to do now if you are thinking about going along. So get on there and do that. There's more information. Go to the Richmond website, richmondfc.com.au. There's a little tab there. That'll take you through it as well. Gentlemen, enjoy the week.
See everyone at Port Melbourne on Saturday. Let's get behind our VFL team in their preliminary final. 2:30 Saturday afternoon at Port Melbourne.
Against the Box Hill Hawks. Against Chrissy Newman, our former Richmond captain, yeah, coaching the Hawks.
So let's hope that the Tigers can get through the grand final at Etihad Stadium the week after, which would just be absolutely amazing. You would know be. What happens when teams win grand finals in the VFL? The senior team goes through and wins in the AFL. Happened last year.
Gentlemen.
Happened the year before.
Carl, you have a great week too.
Hey, you too, guys. I'm keeping a little... I'm pretty quiet.
Carl on Friday night was actually literally speechless from the results.
I was. And it hasn't changed. He was still speechless.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.